Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this is the inaugural.
Hey, man, this is a big deal, right? This is the first Atlanta Business Radio broadcast from our new digs here at the Sandy Springs Innovation Center. I still don't have the parking thing figured out yet for us, but our guest said parking was easy, yeah?
In the visitor, it's very simple.
And free.
And free. I like it. Well, this is going to be a fantastic show, man. We got a studio full. We got paparazzi. We got entourage. We got interns and assistants back there in the far corner. First up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast President with Atlanta Sports Council, Mr. Dan Corso. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Well, Dan, before we get too far into things, tell us about the Atlanta Sports Council. How are you serving the folks here in Atlanta?
Sure. Happy to. So our mission is to recruit sporting events of all types, all sizes to Metro Atlanta. And then once we're hopefully successful in that effort, we organize and plan them and make sure that they're successful so that we can hopefully go back and get them to come back to Atlanta. So everyone watched the Super Bowl, I'd imagine, yesterday.
Sure.
And of course, we are 1 year removed from hosting our Super Bowl, Super Bowl 53, and it was spectacular here. If you watched Miami throughout the weekend and all the national and international attention that the Miami received in hosting the game, all of the pomp and circumstance that comes with hosting that event and the magnitude of it is everything that we lived last year. And it becomes one of those great marketing platforms that we as a region have to really tell our story of Atlanta. And you don't have to go out and do a traditional media buy for that, right? You can just go out and have one of these big events and have all that national publication. So our role is to bring those events here.
And then that was the NFL, but the events that happen here are all sports, all kinds, men, women, young and old, right?
Yeah, we have a good variety here. I think a key part of the quality of life that we as residents have in Metro Atlanta, not just Atlanta, but all of Metro Atlanta, is that there's options for entertainment, sports entertainment. And our role comes into play in our sports community when there is a competitive bid process for a major sporting event. So when cities are competing against each other to become the host of that particular event, our role is to go out and manage that process of bidding and securing the event for Atlanta. And then once we get it here, we organize and manage it.
Now, how has Atlanta kind of been able to secure so much college sports?
Well, we're a hotbed for college sports. I mean, being the hub of the Southeast, we're surrounded by ACC and SEC schools. We're surrounded by a number of HBCU schools, the Sun Belt schools and the Southern Conference. There's just a tremendous amount of colleges throughout, you know, a 3 to 6 hour driving radius of Atlanta. And so when you have that type of volume of colleges around you, you become very, I think, marketable when it comes to hosting these collegiate events, because that's easier for those fans and alumni of those schools to travel in and participate in the event when we're hosting it.
And then coming up next, the next big event here is the Final Four.
Yeah, we're just about 7 weeks away, if my math is correct. We're in February here, so next month, March Madness starts, which is incredible. And then, you know, they go through that tournament, and then it all ends here in Atlanta at Mercedes-Benz Stadium with our fifth men's Final Four. We've been lucky enough to host it 5 times. Our first was back in 1977, back at the old Omni, if folks remember that building. And then we hosted it 3 times inside the Georgia Dome in 2007 and 2013. And now we've got it for the first time ever in Mercedes-Benz Stadium in 2020.
Has there ever been a basketball game in Mercedes-Benz?
No, first time ever. Never a basketball court has been set up in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And that's what's so cool about this event is that, you know, the NCAA brings in their own seating system. And so they set up the basketball court in the center of the field and then build on top of the existing seats a new seating configuration that goes all the way up to the second level, which and then goes up to the top of the building, of course. So we'll have 75,000 people in there watching college basketball.
Wow. And then how do they kind of figure out the sight lines and things like that to give it a good visual experience?
The sight lines are the sight lines. You're in there for the atmosphere. The lower you are, the better the sight line. The higher you are, it's a little tougher, but people still come out. There's a market for it. The tickets sell each and every year. They've been in this model The first was in Detroit, I want to say 10 plus years ago, where they did this center court setup and it went up all the way to the tops of the buildings. They're only going to major stadiums now, indoor stadiums. And thankfully, we've got just an incredible event with Mercedes-Benz Stadium in our community, which makes it very attractive to the NCAA when we go after them to come to our community. We're on about every 6 to 7 year rotation with them.
So now having the actual event is the reason that everybody gathers, but there's lots and lots of events that are built around it. Like, what is your role involved in that? In creating some of those kind of events?
When I say, you know, everything from A to Z, it's everything from A to Z. So we bid and started with the NCAA and worked with a lot of community partners in this community, including the City of Atlanta and Georgia Tech and the Atlanta Convention and Visitors Bureau and a bunch of our corporate partners and others back in 2014. To bid on this event. We were awarded officially for this event in November of 2014. Well, here we are in the first, second quarter of 2020, get ready to host it. So that seems like that was a long time ago, and it was in some ways, but others, when you get into planning it, it really goes pretty quickly. So, you know, the NCAA does a great job of making this event more than just about basketball, college basketball. There's a lot of family-friendly events for all ages. Most of them are free. Everything begins on Friday. We mentioned the stadium. First Final Four Friday is going to be held Friday afternoon. It's the first time that college basketball will be held inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's an open practice, so anybody in Atlanta can come down and watch the four teams practice free to the public. That's going to be exciting. And then all of the activity moves over to the Georgia World Congress Center for Final Four Fan Fest, which is kind of this interactive experience for all fans to participate and kind of just celebrate the game of basketball. On Sunday, we have something unique to Atlanta. Not only are we hosting the Division I men's basketball tournament and championship here in Mercedes-Benz, but the NCAA gave us the honor of hosting Division II and Division III championships inside State Farm Arena on Sunday, free to the public. We held that back in 2013 for the first time that they've ever done it anywhere in the country, where they held Division I, II, and III in the same weekend in the same city. We were the first in 13. It went over fantastic. It was great. They decided to bring it back, and we're really honored. We will, within 30 hours, crown three men's basketball champions, Division I, Division II, and Division III, and we're the only city in the country that can do that. So it's a big honor.
And then what makes us the only city to be able to do that?
It's our setup. It's the people. It's the organizations. But having State Farm Arena, which is where D2 and D3 will be held on Sunday, having that right next door, steps away from Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which is steps away from all the fan events in Centennial Park and the Georgia World Congress Center, which then also is steps away from the hotel rooms of which all the fans, it just gets this experience that's very fan friendly. It's very user friendly for attending media and for the NCAA. It's easier for them to plan everything because it's so contained and so compact. You see other markets that host these events, including Miami, if I will, last night. The stadium looked fantastic, but it's 45 to 50 minutes north of the where the heart of all the other experiences are. Our story here in Atlanta is that everything is contained. And so that becomes a great experience for the fans coming in. But it also is a great part of our story when we go out and pitching these events.
So now, how do you work with kind of the Metro Chamber and the business community on a day-to-day basis to keep these events coming and to keep all the stuff around it relevant and exciting?
Well, our organization is part of the Metro Atlanta Chamber. And so we view these events not only as an economic impact, but also a way to create some economic development. You know, you've got corporations coming in because this is mostly a corporate event, because these big events have pricey tickets. So the corporations come in, they entertain their clients or their partners. They get access to Atlanta. Perhaps they haven't been here in quite a while, so they get a chance to see just how our community has evolved over the years. And perhaps they'll open up an office here. So that becomes an economic development play. We're also very high on the quality of life and the social impacts that this event has. There's some legacies that are left behind. The NCAA has a Read to the Final Four program, where they encourage third graders to go out and read a lot. And then we motivate them to come out and be a part of the weekend if they read a certain amount. So we've touched over 38,000 third graders within the Metro Atlanta area through this program. So you've got economic impact from the visitation, people spending their money. You've got economic development from corporations coming in and experience in Atlanta. And then you got social impact. And so our theme is to try tie to all those together to make the events very successful. And then we go out into the corporate community, and sometimes, you know, we need a little bit of money to put these events on. There's some fundraising, and our corporate community has been second to none where they'll come out and support them. But we also need their highly skilled, highly passionate employees to come out and be volunteers for this event, because we need 2,000 volunteers for the Final Four. We're lucky to have hit that number already, and we've got folks ready to go. But that comes from the corporate community, from the big companies and from the middle-sized companies and the small companies.
Now, we've been talking a lot about sports where there's balls and things like that, but this is also expanded into esports, right? Atlanta has a big gaming presence and technology, obviously, but esports is kind of the next big thing.
It is. And I'm not sure anyone really knows what it is. We have done everything we can. We've launched an organization, an entity within the Atlanta Sports Council called the Atlanta Esports Alliance. And what we're doing there is we're bringing all the key leadership within that sector, individuals and organizations, and kind of bringing some cohesion to it and trying to move it forward and saying, okay, esports is this really highly impactful, highly lucrative cluster within the sports industry nationally and globally. How do we as a region capitalize on that, and how do we organize it and move it forward?
But can you give people an idea of the scope of this? Like, people show up to esports.
Yeah. So as part of that, there are events that people go to and watch other people play video games, but they're highly attended.
Like how many attendance?
I've seen a few that are north of 20,000 people going into arenas
to watch other people play video games.
To watch other people.
Right. I mean, people don't understand how this is kind of a group thing where people gather, and then
there's a social and there's a lifestyle element to it. You know, there's music components to it.
It's not some kid in his basement.
It could start there in my house. Yeah. Right. But as an industry, we're looking to really kind of progress this and say, okay, it's not just the events though. There are companies out there that are startups that are getting into game publishing and manufacturing of the equipment. And then there's professional teams through companies like Cox Enterprises that have two teams here in Atlanta, professional teams. So there's more to it than just events. And so we're trying to really kind of bring that all together and move it forward the best that we can.
And is there regions where this is more popular than other regions, or is this kind of a global thing?
Yeah,
right,
it's very much global. Asia and Europe, but the U.S. is really picking up. And, you know, companies like Turner that broadcasts on a weekly basis live esports tournaments, ESPN now has picked it up. NBA, the Hawks have a 2K professional team. The NBA teams around the league have teams.
So they'll take a video game that's out there that people play as a multiplayer, and then they will build leagues and
around it, correct, and tournaments and everything. Tournaments. Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
And has there been a tournament here where
there have been some smaller tournaments, depending on the game or the platform? Cobb County's hosted a few. Gwinnett's hosted a few. You know, there are some buildings coming up that State Farm Arena could potentially host some major events. So that's part of our Atlanta Esports Alliance that we have underneath us at the Atlanta Sports Council, that we're trying to identify those opportunities.
Now, what's on the roadmap coming? Are you right now? You mentioned the bidding for like the Final Four was what, 6 years ago? 6 years ago. So, what are you now working on for the future?
So, if you go back to 2018, we hosted the College Football National Championship at Mercedes-Benz Stadium with Georgia taking on Alabama. Then Super Bowl 53. We had the MLS All-Star Game in 2018, which is a huge event for us. And then, of course, the men's Final Four coming up. Last year, we announced that we were able to recruit with the Atlanta Braves, the MLB All-Star Game up at Truist Park for 2021. So now that streak continues. Now we've got four consecutive years. So our goal is to try to have a major event each and every year for the next 10 years through 2030. And, of course, the biggest one in the middle of all that is 2026 with the FIFA World Cup. We're still working on that now.
So you're working on that. But that's so when you say big events, you're not even counting all the bowl games and all
that? No, those are the annual events that call Atlanta home, and they're here. And those are very, very beneficial to the community and very lucrative and have their own benefits socially and economically. We support them, but they're based here, so there's no bid process to kind of keep them here.
So you're involved more in anything that requires a bid?
Anything that's competitive. Anything that New Orleans is looking at, or Dallas, or L.A., or Las Vegas, or Chicago, or Tampa, or Miami. All those events that we're all competing against, that's our role, is to make sure that we're at the forefront.
And then what's the most rewarding part of the job for you?
Well, the win is always nice. When Commissioner Goodell said Atlanta, in May of 2016 for the host of 2019, Super Bowl, that was fun. I think the planning process is always fun to see folks come together. Some folks say, you have such a great job. You get to go on, you're really working. I just look back at the Super Bowl, you're going to, a lot of different things and working with our great staff and working with them to kind of help organize things. A lot of our work is in the early play part of the planning process, getting everything negotiated with the venues and the leagues, doing the fundraising, getting the public safety and everything else in place. And then when the event comes, you just hope it goes well, because at the end of the day, you want to get it back. We're not in the business of hosting events once, right. We want them multiple times. And I tell you, what's the one thing you cannot control that everyone seems to judge cities on is the weather. Right. And if you look at our previous Super Bowl 34 in the year 2000, everyone remembers the weather. It was not good. We had some weather incidents, but they don't remember the game. And the game was one of the best in Super Bowl history. If you remember the Rams beating the Titans, it came down to the last play of the Titans, right? Tried to score and got tackled at the one. So lousy weather, great game. Last year, complete reversal. We had incredible weather, but a lousy game. And right. So everyone talked about the weather last year, and despite the game itself. But, we're in a great area. We expect great weather for our Final Four. At the end of the day, it's about people working together, which we do very well. It's about collaboration, which we do very well. And then it just gets down to the setup. And the setup that we have in downtown Atlanta for these big events is second to none.
Good stuff. Well, if somebody wanted to learn more about what you guys got going on, what's the website?
Yeah, hit us up at AtlantaSportsCouncil.com. If you're interested in more Final Four information, you can go to NCAA.com/ Final Four and get involved and come out and we support our event. We'd love to have you down there.
Good stuff.
All right. Hey, stay with us. We're going to visit with a few more guests, okay?
Yes, happy to. Thank you.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us the CEO of DeKalb Academy of Technology and Environment, Dr. Maury Wills. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. What'd you learn in that last segment, man?
Oh, boy. Exciting. I need to partner with him. Yes. I would love to be a part of your group. And so many things, especially with the third graders reading in that project, we do the same thing. And so we want to make sure that we're getting our students on target to read too. So I'm excited. So excellent, excellent job.
Well, give us a little bit of your backstory and how you've been serving the folks in DeKalb County and all over Metro Atlanta.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to be here. First of all, Stan, let me say that we have changed the name, and this is the first time on the air that the name is being read as DeKalb Agricultural Technology and Environment Charter School. And so our focus right now, we've added the agriculture piece. Our focus is on technology and the environment added with the agriculture piece. And we've been in existence for about 15 years. And we are now working with our students so that they could get an understanding understand the ramifications of what it means to be great stewards of their land, great stewards of their environment, and have an understanding of agricultural responsibility as well. We are a K-8 public charter school in DeKalb County. We have currently 780 students. We have 600 students on a waiting list yearly. Wow. And as I said before, we're working on our 16th year with our fifth renewal petition.
So now you've been involved with charter schools for quite a long time.
15 years, yes.
So now what compelled you to get involved with charter schools and creating this kind of a one focused on these kind of things?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I wrote my book, Chartering Success. And that goes into all of the details of what it means to really properly educate a child and giving parents a choice. I believe that there are students out there who have different learning needs, different learning interests, and we wanted to make sure that we address those learning initiatives with children and families. School choice is very important to families. A lot of times in their district schools, they may not have the opportunity to go out and find some of their interests in these schools. So we wanted to put a school together that, first of all, dealt with the community needs, secondly, dealt with the needs of the parents and the students, and thirdly, not forgetting the teachers. We want to make sure that the teachers' needs are addressed. So in a charter school, those are the three entities that you have in looking at what is school choice and how can you benefit, impact the community with school choice. So I have also here some books here. It's called Moving Forward, done by Kilby Anthony. And I want you to look at these as visual books that will really give you a glimpse into what our school is all about. You have the aquaponics program that enhances the relationship between the fish and the plants. And that's a symbiotic relationship that exists. Now, students are learning about the nitrite and nitrite systems of the animals and the conditions of the water, as well as having the goats there. We have goats, so they're understanding that process with the milking the goats and cheese, and we're soon to get a cow. So the kids are excited. This is non-traditional schooling, and we wanted students to make sure that they are exposed and get some interest in their careers as they get exposed to these different fields and levels.
So now when you added the word agriculture in the name and made that a focus, do you think that that's attracting kids, or is that kind of scaring them away? Like, what am I going to use agriculture for?
Right, right. Well, we've been using it since day one. We just haven't really made an investment in it as we should have. And now that we're targeting that piece and helping kids to understand that they can have a very, very competitive a piece in this understanding the agricultural. Even when you're growing plants, that's agricultural sciences that too many of our students are not aware of. They go to Walmart, they go to the grocery stores, right, and they get the plants there, but they don't realize the process in horticulture. They don't understand the process of organic farming. And so that agriculture piece is very important to them, understanding that there is a real context to what they're doing in this world, and it's right there in front of them. So we every day we try to do this, and every day we try to make sure that we bring a focus, a real focus, to the students in the classroom.
And then how do you kind of ensure the child is successful as an adult? Like, how do they make the transition once they've come into your environment and your schooling, and then they've taken the leap? Then you said through eighth grade?
Through eighth grade.
Right. So now they're in the danger zone.
Right. and there's so many components to that as well. You know, the first of all, having the parent that is involved in their child's education is the first piece in becoming successful. And I always tell my parents, if you're expecting the schoolhouse to educate your child fully, that's not going to happen here. You have to be a partnership with the school. And
but
you
that doesn't
have to
happen anywhere, right?
It should. That's one formula that you need, is having the parent.
Engaged,
you need parents, right, to make it very successful. Now, in some cases, you may not have the parent there, and that's where we step in. Mm-hmm. We act as surrogate parents for our students, and we want to make sure that they're successful despite the fact that they may not have a parent in the household, despite the fact that they may not have a parent who's educated on these initiatives that we're bringing forward. But it's exposing the students to those initiatives, and we're ensuring that they are capable of becoming leaders and capable of becoming producers versus consumers. So it's a product that we want to make sure that we invest in. It starts from kindergarten, showing love with our students, showing compassion, showing that it's okay to make mistakes, but also showing them a level of understanding, a uniqueness in charter schools, which we have in a program of excitement. When you send students to school, you want them to be excited about learning, not about listening to what the teacher has to
right,
say.
And just kind of parroting back.
Right. And back, so right, with our components that we provide here, as I said, we're the only school in Georgia, in the southeastern region, and probably in the USA, that has those three components together. And I call it the triad approach to understanding school. And these kids are already interested. So first, we got the partnerships with the parents. Second of all, we have the interest. The next thing that you need to have is a high level of rigor. And that's providing some sort of challenge for students. We all like to be challenged. And so at some point in time, bringing those three pieces together, especially our focus, brings a unique challenge and opportunities that want students to be successful.
Now, is this going to help the child prepare for a world that's so technologically driven?
I think it exposes them to the opportunities and prepares them to be able to cope with the challenges before them. So they're exposed at an early age in technology and the environment and agricultural objectives. And so this is not their first time seeing it. Instead of being exposed to just one, they have two more And so throughout their years at DATE, they are able to spend a few of those experiences with agriculture, a few experiences with technology, and a few experiences with environment. I'm sorry. And yeah, so we're very excited that we're offering these courses. And one thing I want to say is that it takes a partnership. It takes a community. And as we were talking about the community of Atlanta has embraced us really well with the Chattahoochee Nature Center, the Gwinnett Heritage Center being a part of that process and helping us to achieve the dream of making sure our students are great stewards.
Now, for you, can you share a story? I don't name any names, but an impact that you've had on a student or two?
Well, I have many stories. Let me pinpoint, because I have probably about 30% or 40% of our students come back to DATE after they graduate, and they talk to our students. And, you know, it's overwhelming, but at the same time, it's insightful to realize that we did make an impact, because when our students are there, they complain about the uniforms that they wear. They have to wear a blazer. They have to wear a tie. They have to wear dress shoes and slacks. And they have to stand up when they have to answer a question in complete sentences. And so when they go outside of DATE and go into a high school, they're like free, and they are so, excited about their freedom. But they always come back and say to our children, you know what? Listen to your teachers, listen to your CEO, your principals. They really love you. There's no other environment like this. I know when you feel here, you're here, you feel like you're trapped, but honestly, you are well prepared than most kids in your environment when you get there, because they prepares you, they cares for you. And so I think that's the most intriguing conversation or opportunities we've had to understand our children and see in their eyes that they really love DATE, and DATE has shaped them into becoming, you know, great citizens. And so I could talk about many more stories, but just having an overwhelming support of what we do confirmed by the students who come back to us and share their love.
So now you mentioned a waiting list to get in. What's the future of DATE? Are you looking to expand? Are you looking to get more students in every year?
Well, we would love to have more students. Right now, we are focused on the students that we have. There is a public need for an additional school, high school especially, and parents have been pushing for that. It's a lot of work, but I think with more partnerships being developed, we can have a great opportunity in looking at that as a projection.
So now, like, what kind of partnerships are you talking about?
Well, we would love to have partnerships with technology corporations. We would love to have partnerships with financial institutions to help us with some of the problematic money issues that are coming down our way. You know, we're solely funded by the state and the district. And right now there are some issues going on. And so we would love to have private donations and funding so we can continue our mission and our vision.
So you need companies in the area to support you financially to help you help more students?
Oh, that would always be great, yes. But not only financially, but, you know, to enhance our programs, our technology programs, our agriculture programs. We have just started electric cars and building electric cars, and we would love for a company out there who has that experience to come with us and help us with some of these techniques that we're doing with our students so we can get our electric cars off the ground. And we will be racing those cars soon. Mm-hmm. So we would love to post your visual, your company's visual or logo on our car and make it be known that we're there to support you as well.
Good stuff. Well, congratulations on all your success, and thank you for making such an impact in the community.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, keep up the good work, man. My folks were both involved in education, and I guess a little bit vicariously, I got to see the impact that they had on people. So you must find this work incredibly rewarding.
Oh, it's very rewarding. And I don't call it work. I call it a mission. I call it a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I love it.
If somebody wanted to learn more, what's the website?
Oh, feel free to check us out at www.decabacademy.org. And that's where you also can get my book as well, Chartering Success.
And is that book for someone that's thinking about starting a charter school, or what's the book about?
This book is about really the ins and outs of charter schools, the history of charter schools in Georgia. It talks about DATE in terms of how it began, and also the problems that we've had and the great successes that we've had, and just talks about the students and the teachers and the parents' input in making this school great.
Good stuff. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, stay with us a few more minutes. We're going to visit with a couple more guests, all right?
My pleasure.
All right, Lee, you ready for the headliners?
I am.
We got the guys here from Footprints Floors. Tell us a little bit about Footprints Floors and what you guys are out there trying to do for folks.
Yeah, my name's Noel Brewick. I'm the franchise owner of Footprints Floors in Atlanta, North Atlanta, Sandy Springs. And Footprints is a unique business model. We're a flooring business model, but we specialize in installation versus carrying product. So actually, the business was founded in Denver approximately 11 years ago. A gentleman named Brian Park, very, very successful businessman. He had a really unique business model that he started franchising in the state of Colorado back about 7 years ago or so, and had four franchises there that are very unique. He's just took a look at it and said, look, I can take this thing nationwide and start doing some experimenting, some beta testing, some markets, and found out that that business model works well outside of the state of Colorado. So we started franchising about a year ago now, and all of a sudden we went from 7 franchisees to 21 across the nation.
Wow.
And we're
wow.
probably going to sign up another 20 to 40 in the coming year. So
what attracted you to that? Because to an emerging franchise?
Yeah, well, I spent 29 years in corporate America. I was, I worked for Sherwin-Williams my first 5 years out of college, and I worked 22 years for Serta Simmons Bedding recently in sales as a national account sales, VP of sales, spent some time in finance. They went through a reorganization about a year ago, and I was given the choice of either taking a severance or staying on in a different position. Mm-hmm. I took them up on the severance. Good company, and they were, you know, great to me and that type of thing, but I just felt it was time to move on and do something else. So I always had a little bit of an entrepreneurial spirit that I thought that I would regret if I didn't do it at some point. So I started looking at different business models, wanting to do something for myself. And what drew me to this is the fact that it's all home-based. We don't have any brick and mortar, very few, if any, employees. And it just seemed like a great fit. I like the business model because it's a little bit different. When you look at other flooring businesses, they try to sell you product. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that, but we're really the only franchise that you don't have to supply the product. You can buy the product from anywhere and we'll install it, and floor refinishing. So if you have hardwood floors that are in rough shape, need refinishing, we'll take care of that for you as well. In fact, that's the main specialty of us is hardwood floor refinishing, as well as installation of, you know, tile, laminate, you know, luxury vinyl plank. You name it. We mainly specialize in hard goods. Don't get into a lot of carpet. Well, we can do carpet too if absolutely needed, but mainly hard type services.
So now walk me through a day in your life as a franchisee.
Yeah, well, let me back up just a little bit. The other great thing about the franchise support at Footprints is they do all of most of the advertising marketing for us. And the lead generation for us, like for instance, a lot of the leads will come from places like an Angie's List or an Home Advisor or through Google, that type of thing. So our customer service, we have very, very professional customer service people, and we get people inquiring about needing work done. It will go onto my schedule. So my day.
It just automatically populates your schedule?
Just populates our schedule. Yep.
Wow.
So I don't, on the front end, I don't have to contact customers. Our professional customer service team does that for us. And then so I set up estimates. And what we do is we go out and give a very consultative approach to the business. We go out there and, you know, take a look at the space, explain to the customer their options. Do you want to put a, you know, luxury vinyl product in your house? Do you want to put hardwoods in your floor? You know, talk about, you know, the process, the cost options, that type of thing. And then we'd either give them an estimate on the spot or go home and type it up and send it off in very professional estimating software as well. And if they decide to go with us, then what we'll do then is to put them on the schedule and do the production. And then we hire professional subcontractors to do all of the work. And then we also make sure that – and then what I will do after that, once we get the job scheduled and the install scheduled, is then my job shifts to, you know, a job manager. So my job really is to give estimates, consult with customers, and then to inspect jobs, making sure they're being done correctly. At the end, so you just it's a full approach from start to finish.
But my relationships with footprints and then the installation, that's your problem of making sure you have the right people
Exactly. And we make sure that we're not going to cut corners in the installation. For example, we're going to be using the correct nail pattern, the correct glues, we're not going to cut corners. We're going to either install to manufacturer recommendations or recommendations of, say, the National Wood Foundation, Tile Council of America, that type of thing. We're not a fly-by-night company that's going to come in and ruin your floor. So
now, when you were deciding, when you separated from your corporate job and you were deciding, okay, what's my second act going to be? How did you were you kind of playing several different franchises?
Hold on a minute. I want to know how the conversation with the significant other went. Hey, honey, I know I've got this regular job, pays pretty well. We got everything figured out. We got our budget. What happened when you came home and told her?
Well, she was on board too. See, my wife worked for the same company I did. Going through a reorg and things weren't going to get easier in terms of work-life balance. So she was on board with it, and she always knew that I wanted to do something kind of on my own. So she was very, very supportive. And, she still got that great corporate job that she does very, very well at. She's a professional, and so she was very supportive.
And she got new floors.
Actually, the thing is, our floors are actually in rough shape. I'm the last person to.
It's the cobbler's children.
I have two big dogs that have kind of destroyed our floors over the years, so I need to actually have them redone.
So now, but when you were choosing the franchise, were you choosing among several and you landed on footprints?
I was working through a franchise consultant, and I looked at a lot of different business models. And I was looking at, brow studios. I was looking at
For an owner-operator where you wanted to get involved and actually talk to the customers? Or were you looking for absentee?
A little of everything, just unique opportunities. What I started realizing was I wanted to get away with anything that had any sort of like a retail lease, that type of thing.
So you didn't want any overhead?
Exactly. So as I want to be an entrepreneur, but at this point in my life, I'm in my 50s now, so I want to do something that is a little bit safer in terms of investment. And you get into some of these items, and it can take you 6 to 12 months to get going, and then hopefully, get a payback on your investment. There's a lot of it didn't sit well with me in some of the different things, the overhead expenses involved with some of the other options I was looking at.
So Footprints, it seems, has cracked the code in a local market to be able to kind of bubble up leads for you that turn into clients.
Correct. Yep.
And that, so when you take that weight off you, and then you take the weight of no kind of physical location that you're responsible for, or warehousing inventory and all that stuff.
Correct.
Your job is just sales and account support.
Exactly. That is exactly right. In fact, it's the fact that we have this professional customer service center, and I really just need to communicate with the customer, sell them on our services, make sure they're comfortable with everything we're servicing, and then just make sure that the job goes right. And when we offer a great value, we're not always going to be the least expensive. Most of the times we are. But what we do is you can count on us to stand behind our product. We give a 1-year workmanship warranty on all of our, installs. And, we'll be there tomorrow, if something doesn't go right.
So now if somebody wanted to use your service, say they wanted new floor somewhere, they wanted refinishing, they don't have to know anything about flooring. You're still the expert, and you'll say, okay, you should, based on whatever you're trying to achieve here, go here, and then now the customer has to get the stuff, or do they pay you and then
exactly you get it? What we'll do is it depends. If it's going to be a wood install, like what we call a site finish wood, we'll supply that product. We'll go to the wood vendors and get the.
So you make recommendations, but the client doesn't have to get a truck and bring a bunch of flooring.
They don't have to. No, we can either.
It's turnkey from the customers.
It's turnkey standpoint. From the customers. They can haul the, for example, if they're putting laminate or vinyl or something in their house, they can supply it and bring it back to their house if they would like to. Otherwise, we can a lot of times assist with that as well. It just depends. It's all up to the client as well. A lot of times what we find is we'll get people that have bought, say, 300 square feet of flooring from Home Depot, and it's been sitting in their garage for two years, thinking they're going to do it. So then they finally, you know, call over and say, I'm never going to do this. So, so they call us and, you know, we'll do that for them. You know, then also, you know, we'll do things like subfloor repairs if it needs to be done. You know, then you have to put up shoe molding, that type of thing, you know, along with everything that has to do with floor backsplashes. We also do backsplashes. So, but yeah, it's a fun business. It's,
How long have you had this one?
I've been involved since about June, but I've kind of been up and running since about September, so about 6 months.
So it's met your expectations? You've been happy with it?
I've been very, very happy with it. It's somewhat of a seasonal business. So
really?
I started, yeah.
What's the season of flooring?
You know, it kind of follows real estate market a little bit. You know, like fourth quarter is a little bit slower than some of the other areas. Once you get into spring and summer, get through the winter into spring and summer, the business picks up dramatically. So this will be my first spring and summer, and I'm already seeing it in January where people are start planning for these projects a little bit more than they would in the wintertime.
Are realtors good people to know in the community? Like, will they refer business to you? Is that the business model?
Absolutely. Yep.
I'll bet.
Yep. Yep. There's a lot of different directions you can take it. And also, you know, we specialize in residential, but we can also get involved in commercial projects and that type of thing too.
So now, is that part of the kind of the playbook that Footprints gives you? Is, okay, meet all the real estate agents or meet all the builders, or do they give you kind of that kind of?
A little bit, but they kind of leave it up to each franchisee to do that. You know, the recipe is to, you know, get the leads and then convert on the leads and
so that's their playbook is, hey, yes, just, you know, when
correct.
They, when I give you this number, call them back fast.
And also, then, pretty much. Yeah. And, and to give quality training too. I haven't really touched on that, but we spent, you know, a month in training to understand, you know, the business. Mm-hmm. You don't have to know anything about flooring going into it. I had a little bit of knowledge just because my background was Sherwin-Williams,
right,
and I've owned multiple homes where I've had floors put in, so I kind of understood the whole process, and I'm a little bit of a handyman myself. So, there's a lot to learn. Every estimate you go out to, you see something different too. So every day that goes by, you draw and get more and more, you know, knowledge. And we spent 3-4 weeks in Denver to go through training with the home office as well.
And then for a person considering being a franchisee, what type of person do you think is the right fit for a Footprints franchisee?
I think you just have to be, honest, kind of have some integrity, understand that, be able to speak with consumers, customers, and just be, you know, really have a consultative approach. Don't be, I guess, rushed, and we don't want salesman per se. You know, that's not going to be the right fit. I think most of the people that are involved are got involved because of the fact it's kind of a family type company too. For being a franchise, it's a fun place to be right now. It's an exciting place to be, you know, especially with the growth that's going to come. And there's a lot of different directions that this business can go. I'm not going to discuss on air some of these plans, but they but it's pretty exciting. It's a pretty exciting time to be there. You know,
and then for you, you're just looking to kind of get a foothold here.
Absolutely.
In the North Metro area.
Yeah.
But are you looking to expand? Did you buy more territories?
I have what's the equivalent of two territories. You know, my territory expands from basically Buckhead through Sandy Springs, Roswell, Alpharetta, Milton, a little bit into Marietta, you know, and then Matt is Peachtree City, Smyrna. The areas down there. So
if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the website of Footprints?
www.footprintsfloors.com. That's plural, Footprints, and Floors plural as well.
And then they can get a hold of you and just drill down to the locate. They put in their zip code or something.
Absolutely.
It'll send them to the right place.
You can find there's a locator on the website that wherever you're at, will show you who the local franchisee is and the contact information for that particular franchisee.
And then is it free when you come out to do your estimates?
Everything is absolutely free. Yep, absolutely. There's no charge, all free estimates.
Good stuff, Noel. And thank you for sharing your story, you and Matt.
Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. Thank you to all our guests, and we will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.